All right, we will move on to the second case of this morning, United States v. Kenneth Lee and Myung O. Lee. Not related, we are told. Mr. Omar.
May it please the Court, Ken Lee's convictions should be overturned as there is insufficient evidence to sustain the jury's verdict as to both counts. If I may begin with count two, the money laundering charge. There is insufficient evidence to sustain the money laundering conviction for three main reasons. There is no evidence presented that net proceeds were laundered in this case. Secondly, Mr. Lee didn't intend to accomplish the object of the conspiracy. And third, Mr. Lee had no authorization over these accounts. With respect to the net proceeds being laundered in this case, the Seventh Circuit opinions of Cialba, Santos, and Malone control and are good law.
Well, you say that, although the Supreme Court has heard arguments in Santos. Do you think this Court needs to hold a decision in this case to await word from Washington in the Santos case?
No, Your Honor. In this case, the jury was instructed under the Seventh Circuit's opinion under Cialba as to the definition of net proceeds, and it's that decision that this Court should review and resolve under the law that is in place at this time.
Well, I know that, but I guess maybe you're saying that since the jury convicted your client even under our rather strict net proceeds standard, it even more would have convicted your client if it had been allowed to look at gross proceeds. Because that's the position, of course, the government is presenting in the Santos.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, our position is that there was insufficient evidence for the jury to conclude that Mr. Lee had laundered net proceeds. The government did not present a net proceeds argument, and so there is insufficient evidence to sustain the jury's conviction, as the case was presented under a gross proceeds theory.
Well, but I think the Court's instructions weren't that. And besides, even in Santos, the situation of reinvestment of net income does constitute money laundering, and these advertising expenses are certainly for future activities. Income comes in, you pay, as it were, your staff, you pay for your supplies and so on, and then you go out and buy advertising to bring in future business, to keep the illegal enterprise going.
Your Honor, I would equate the advertising not to something that was paid out of net proceeds. Advertising is, as in Santos or Cialba, where gambling winnings were paid to gamblers. Advertising is necessary for the business to operate.
Well, and that's the whole problem, right? Because the money laundering statute, among other things, covers a situation where you are spending the money to promote the carrying on of the unlawful activity. So advertising takes some money, goes out, puts an ad in wherever they were placing their ads so that more people will come in and patronize the business. It's very future-oriented.
Yes, Your Honor. However, that money is not spent using net proceeds. The advertising fees that were paid were gross receipts because it's a cost.
What's your idea of net proceeds? I mean, you know, there has to be some place where you draw the line between things, expenses that have been incurred in the past, and then what we spoke of in Santos as reinvestment of
net proceeds
of money. Otherwise, you just zero everything out. Ultimately, I'm sure every dollar winds up in somebody's pocket, but it doesn't mean that every business has net proceeds of zero.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, we have a very unique case where the bank account where all of the business expenses were paid out has been documented, and the government's accountant has identified every transaction from that account as being an expense account. And so these advertising expenses come out of
I think maybe the confusion is that from an accounting point of view, perhaps they are quote-unquote expenses as opposed to capitalization.
Yes.
But because they're expenses from the point of view of an accountant doesn't necessarily mean they're expenses in the sense that Santos is trying to draw the line for the money laundering statute.
Yes, Your Honor, if I'm understanding your concern, we have to find a definition for net proceeds and gross receipts. And the Santos and Cialba cases do not take that step. It defines what proceeds is. And what we have proceeds is meaning net receipts. And our record from the district court is that this account was used for business expenses and that these business expenses operate under the gross receipts theory. And anything that wasn't used for business expenses is net receipts. And so,
It isn't part of the point of the money laundering statute to prevent the growing of these illegal businesses?
It's to prevent the use of the profits of these businesses. And what we are really looking for, and what legislative intent and the cases that are concerned with, is securing that defendants, criminals, are not using the profits of these businesses to, again, reinvest within the business.
You either take your profits out now, or you put them in the future growth of the business and take them out.
Right, and advertising expenses are not profits. The money paid for the advertising do not constitute the profits of the business. This is a cost of doing business, so much so that it's equal to a drug dealer paying for his stock and trade, or to a gambling operation paying its winners. You have to have advertising to operate this business. It's not an optional. It's not something that you choose to do with your profits. You have to have it.
Don't we have a question here? You have period almost. Again, I'm thinking in accounting terms. At the end of a particular accounting period, there are going to be a certain amount of profits, as you say. And then the business has to decide, what are we going to do with this money? Well, one thing we might do with it is just distribute to shareholders. We might distribute to management. One thing we might do is reinvest it in the business. We might go out and buy a bunch of advertising. We might buy a new facility. We might buy a machine. So in the next period, those net profits now have been reinvested in the business. And I think that's what we were trying to get at in the Santos case.
Yes, Your Honor. If it is determined that at the end of an accounting period you have these net proceeds, and then that is
there were surely profits here. Mr. Lee himself had $77,000 in some safe in his residence, right?
He did have that money in his residence. Mr. Lee was paid for his construction of the premises, and the record also reflects that he was.
Go ahead.
He was
finish your thought.
That he got a portion of money that he transferred for the prostitutes in this case. However, the net proceeds were never presented to the jury as portion of this account is net receipts as opposed to gross.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Ackerman now?
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Alan Ackerman. If it pleases the court, I'm here on behalf of Ma Young Lee. Ma Young Lee is a 66-year-old grandmother, enlarged on bond pending appeal, currently residing with her family in Vermont, I believe. The issue I hope to present to the court in a persuasive fashion relates to the method that the government used to convict her. My points are very simple and straightforward. Somewhere within 401, 403, and 404B of the Federal Rules of Evidence comes the issue that is prominent here. And regarding money laundering, if the court please, my preference is to wait for the Supreme Court. They have two cases, Coelas and Santos. So as long as both defendants are in large pending appeal, there is no harm there. Regarding Ma Young Lee, she was tried to a jury. In advance of the jury selection, there was a fairly brief pretrial hearing. Among other things, the government urged, and the trial court embraced the government's thinking, that number one, they had the right to briefly present testimony that the government's investigation vis-a-vis Rockford prostitution commenced with a newspaper or newspaper articles, period. Number two, the government
persuasively argued that Ms. Lee's Toledo, Ohio Rainbow Spa venture going back 3 years earlier, was permissive to show knowledge vis-a-vis prostitution.
Now, Mr. Ackerman, on that one point, it seemed to me that, or my understanding of this record, is that Ms. Lee's entire defense was essentially based on a lack of knowledge. So why doesn't that make the admission of the Toledo operation entirely permissible under Rule 404B?
I would cautiously agree with the court. I would cautiously concede the insightful comment by Your Honor. That does not give rise to anything in this indictment or the proof in this case, in any case, where the government can suggest that rape evidence is admissible where the reason for the prior uncharged evidence was knowledge.
But let me focus you on one thing, though. With respect to your 404B argument,
yes.
If I understand it, you really are only arguing that what we would think of as the fourth part of the 404B test was violated here, namely that the prejudicial impact of this earlier evidence outweighed whatever probative value it may have, because it looks to me like all the other parts of 404B are satisfied.
Not the newspaper part, Your Honor.
Well, but the Toledo evidence specifically.
Toledo evidence as evidence, and please keep in mind that on March 24, 2006, in advance of trial, when the government presented its reasons for the rainbow evidence, nary a word does the court find in the transcript about forced sex or anything even close to it.
What's wrong with that? It's a
this is an emotional. This is persuasive in the sense that, and I bounced this off my spouse so much, and she told me that if there's ever an emotional argument that a jury will find in favor of the prosecution and against the government, against the defendant, it has to do with permitting rape.
But that word wasn't...
I'm sorry.
Well, the word wasn't used, but the synonym forced sex. Now, wait a second.
Was an objection made at the trial level to that aspect of the evidence?
Ah. When that was blurted out by Ms. Kim, there are questions this court should have for the prosecution. Did they know this was coming? Because it's not in the pretrial evidence. It's not in the discovery. So did the government know this was coming? If they did, they had affronted with Judge Reinhart on March 24th.
Is that an indirect way of answering Judge Tinder's question, no objection was made?
There's the pretrial objection for the admission of all of it.
Was it renewed for that reason, because the nature of the sex was forced sex?
Correct.
Rather than consensual?
Correct.
It was renewed?
No, there was no direct objection to that at the time it was offered.
And then didn't the defense in cross-examining
absolutely
go into this at some substantial level?
Absolutely.
And didn't the defense argue about it as well?
The defense did not argue during summation, if I recall. What they did do is cross-examine on it, which they have every right to do, because if it's admitted over objection in the first place, March 24th, 2006, the pretrial hearing, where they wanted all the rainbow evidence out. The district court rejected that, gave a limiting instruction, for whatever that's worth, according to Chief Judge Easterbrook, mumbo jumbo, but that's
Chief Judge Easterbrook meant to say, by the way, that no limiting instructions would ever be respected again in the Seventh Circuit.
I have one more point.
I think you're a bit over-reading this.
As long as I'm respectfully urging the court to ask the government a few questions, this finger-caught evidence, that came out of nowhere. Now, that could not have helped the defendant at all, because there was a motion and an objection, a motion for mistrial. The objection was sustained, the motion for mistrial denied. Now, this vivid description by FBI agent Shauna Robinson, I think her name was, regarding the finger caught.
Only a brief moment in the trial, though. It's not like people are going back and harping on it.
Your Honor, Every trial has critical moments, brief as they may be. Is there emotional charge to what has been said? And I use the word rape. Maybe it's inappropriate. Forced sex is the same thing. Finger-caught evidence, inappropriate. Is it emotionally charged? Maybe not as much as rape.
All right. Now, Mr. Ackerman, your time is almost up, but I'm just going to say, whatever may have gone on, there was a huge amount of evidence in this record suggesting that these people were, in fact, running the enterprise that they were charged with. And a district court judge is going to have to balance that. Even if he made a mistake with some of this, is it really harmful?
This is harmful. Okay. This was not a passing moment. This was the trial. Anna Kim was the trial. She was the only one who linked Rainbow and Tokyo in Rockford.
And thank you for permitting me to argue. Judge Timber, good morning. I hope we see you again.
Thank you.
Mr. Iosparo?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Michael Osparo on behalf of the United States. I don't believe this Court needs to wait for the Supreme Court's decision in Santos in order to decide this case. We believe that even under the Santos decision as it stands, that we prove that there was a reinvestment of net proceeds by both Ken Lee and Myung Lee.
Now, I have a question for you about that. With respect to the sentencing part of this case, I think it's Mr. Lee comes up with the number $29,730.49 for net profits, and he suggests gross profits of $655,000. And, okay, I understand that's for sentencing, but did the government introduce at any point its own number for net proceeds at any given time?
A specific number? No, what we introduced through an IRS agent was a summary of the checking account records, and I believe those are included in the government's appendix. And what those showed was the credit card receipts going into those checking accounts and the expenses being paid out of the checking accounts. Utilities, for example, and most importantly for our purposes here, advertising and promotional expenses, which were paid above and beyond the past operational expenses.
So you really need us to adopt this past future. That's not quite the reinvestment line maybe that Santos talked about. You need us to look at these checking ledgers and decide how many things were payments for expenses already incurred, if you will, at the moment of the payment. How many things go to the future operation of the business?
There's more than just the checking account records, Your Honor. Ken Lee met with an undercover FBI agent, and during his meetings with the undercover FBI agent, he discussed the operations of the spas. And one of his main points was that advertising was the biggest expense. I think he gave a number, and I forget the number, but he gave a number, $18,000 per month, I believe, for advertising expenses that each of the spas incurred. And that was above and beyond all of the past or operational expenses, above and beyond what was paid on a daily basis in cash to the working girls, because the cut each day, the 50-50 cut, was made after that day came to an end. And the girls were paid in cash with what amounted to approximately two-thirds of the gross receipts, by, according to the testimony. And then everything else was taken by the owners or in terms of the credit card receipts, put into these business checking accounts. So after all of those expenses, you could equate those payments to the working girls to the payments to the bettors in Santos or Xialba. After all of those payments, then the future promotional aspect of the business is reinvested. And advertising is, for all intents and purposes, synonymous with promotion. The only reason you advertise a business is to promote it and to make more money. And that money was taken out of the net proceeds after everything else was paid out.
Right. The evidence shows that it's about two-thirds cash, one-third credit.
That's right. So for those reasons, we don't believe that this court needs to wait for the Supreme Court's decision in Santos in order to affirm both defendants' convictions here.
So just to be clear, you're relying on the subpart of 1956A1 that looks at knowing with the intent to promote the carrying on of specified unlawful activity?
That's right.
Okay. And you're focusing mostly on the advertising expenses. Your brief seemed to include the rent as well, and I don't hear that in your argument today. Are you withdrawing that part of the argument?
We're not withdrawing that. The rent, we believe, also is a future expense. Pay rent for the following month or the following period, whatever that rental period may be. So that's a future expense as well. Advertising is the most synonymous with promotion, obviously, but our position remains that because it was made for a future expense, rent is a future expense, and that was above and beyond the past operational expenses, that constitutes promotion as well. Advertising is certainly clearer and cleaner. The evidence with respect to count one for Kenneth Lee, Mr. Omar didn't spend a lot of time on this, but I just want to briefly direct the court to our brief. The evidence was overwhelming with respect to count one and Kenneth Lee and his participation in the conspiracy, his intent to further it. He did a lot of things. He was a handyman. He built the spas. He rented the spas. He drove the working girls from the airport to the spas in Rockford. He went to post offices and structured postal money orders on behalf of the working girls. He did a lot of things, and the evidence, we believe, was overwhelming that he was a part of this conspiracy and that he had every intention to further it. Mr. Ackerman focused primarily on the 404B evidence.
I just want to go back to Mr. Lee for 1 minute. As I understood his argument, he's saying that he didn't have, I guess this is on the conspiracy to use interstate facilities, that he had no idea that phone lines were going to be used you needed to prove that.
Believe me, Rand Park, who was a co-defendant, testified that Ken Lee helped her set up the phone lines and helped her set up the credit card machines. He knew there were credit card machines that were being used at both the Paradise and the Pine Tree Spa. In fact, when the FBI executed a search warrant at the Pine Tree Spa, they found the credit card machine attached to a telephone line, and on the wall next to it was Ken Lee's telephone number above Young Jia Wang's telephone number. He knew exactly what was going on. He was part and parcel of setting up those machines in the first place.
Could I ask, now I know we consolidated this. These people are not related. The spas are not related. It just happens that a couple of them came up at the same time.
That's right. These arose out of a series of...
Are there more prosecutions like this on the way?
This is the last one, thankfully.
Okay.
This is the third time I've appeared before the Seventh Circuit on this series of cases. This was an investigation into 7 massage parlors that were being used as fronts for prostitution in Rockford. And this has to do with 3 of them. Ken Lee was involved with 2, the Paradise and the Pine Tree. Young Lee was involved with the other. They're not related, and they were charged differently.
But they were all brought at about the same time under approximately the same legal theories?
Yes. With respect to Myung Oak Lee and the 404B evidence, first, like to touch on the newspaper evidence that Mr. Ackerman talked about. There was one question and one answer to Special Agent Sylvia of the FBI about how this investigation had got started. And the district court limited us to that one question and one answer. And Mr. Sylvia said it got started by a newspaper article. Rockford Register Star wrote an article about what was going on at these spas. That was it. There wasn't anything else about human trafficking. There wasn't anything else about what was in that newspaper article or any other newspaper articles. And I believe Mr. Ackerman attached in his appendix a sample article which had to do with human trafficking. That was never a part of the record, and that was never referred to at trial. This was a very limited scope of questioning, one question, one answer, about how this investigation got started.
What was the point of that question, though?
Simply to let the jury know why the FBI got involved here, just to lay a little bit of groundwork.
What difference would that make? If there's jurisdiction, there's jurisdiction. Why does it matter that it was as a result of seeing something in a newspaper?
Certainly it wasn't done with any intent that any jurors go and look for that newspaper article. It was simply to let the jurors know this is why the FBI got involved, and it was simple as that. With respect to what Mr. Ackerman characterizes as this rape, forced sex testimony, there is nothing in this record where the word rape is used. Ms. Kim testified at trial that she was forced to have sex. That was gone into on cross-examination at length.
Didn't it first come out on direct examination, though?
Yes. That was the first time she ever talked about forced sex. It was gone into at length on cross-examination. It was a minor part of not only her testimony, which lasted for the better part of a day, but of the trial in general. It wasn't highlighted.
The government didn't know that she was going to characterize her participation that way?
No, Your Honor, we didn't.
I mean, because it is, I mean, as Mr. Ackerman points out, it's an inflammatory thought. I mean, the jurors are going to probably be repulsed by that.
But when you put it into the context of her testimony, which lasted for the better part of a day, and the trial as a whole, which lasted for several days, and the limiting instruction that the court gave, it really is a very minor part of what was a lengthy trial. It was highlighted on cross-examination, was not gone into by either the government or the defense in closing argument. So we don't believe that when you look at this as a whole, that this amounts to anything other than a minor part of her testimony. Obviously, the Toledo, Ohio evidence became relevant because of the defense here. The defense was, I owned this business, yes, but I had no idea what was going on. The head-in-the-sand ostrich defense.
By the way, I see your time's running down, but you concede that Judge Reinhart made sentencing errors with respect to the guidelines?
Yes. We believe that both defendants should have been sentenced under 2S1.1A, I believe, rather than B. And all of the other defendants in these cases and the similarly situated cases were sentenced under the appropriate guideline section, which is the reason we're conceding error in both of these instances. Because both defendants were involved in committing the underlying offense, they should be sentenced under 2S1.1A, and the value of laundered funds becomes a moot point. Be happy to answer any other questions the court may have, but for all of those reasons, we believe that the defendant's conviction should be affirmed and that there should be a limited remand for resentencing for the reasons that I just stated.
All right.
Thank you
very much. Now, I think that they each ran out of time, didn't they? But Mr. Omar and Mr. Ackerman, if you would each like 1 minute to wrap up something, we can give that to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it. I would point out that the government mentioned Mr. Lee and Miron Park's encounter regarding the credit card operating machines. They presented that as evidence that Mr. Lee had some knowledge or working relationship with these credit card machines. The judge in this case granted a limiting instruction that the jury was not to consider that in relation to the charged conspiracy with Young Jia Huang and the co-defendant in this case and Kenneth Lee. And knowledge, Your Honors, is not alone is not enough to establish a conspiracy. Mr. Lee needed some stake in the operation. These court's decisions in Stern, Campione, and Marin show that the defendant needs to authorize to make some kind of decisions or some kind of operating authority over these credit card machines. And in this case, Kenneth Lee did not have any relation to these machines other than he was present at one time as an interpreter. Thank you for the time.
All right, thanks.
Now that we know the government didn't know, I would label the outburst about forced sex as an evidentiary harpoon, which has its own body of law. I did not know that would be the government's position. An evidentiary harpoon, as it is, may lead to reversible error because of the stark nature of the testimony. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to all counsel. We will take the case under advisement.